Hello, welcome back to our show talking about true crime. We are your host Olivia and co-host Michelle. In today's episode, we will be talking about Harold Shipman, who was a British doctor and a serial killer. We will be talking about his life and crimes. This is episode 8. If you are interested in hearing more about him, then please listen to our episode about him. We hope you are as interested in learning about Harold as we are. Who is Harold Shipman and what crimes did he commit? Find out in this episode of Talking About True Crime. Due to the graphic nature of this podcast, there will be things mentioned that are triggers for some people. Proceed with caution. Not recommended for people under the age of 13. Harold Shipman was born on January 14, 1946 in Nottingham, England. He was the second born of three children to Harold Frederick Shipman, who worked as a truck driver, and Vera Britton. He was known as Fred, as his middle name was Frederick. He was a middle-class working family. They had enough money to not have to struggle. His father worked really hard to provide for his family, though. In school, he did well. Harold played rugby. He excelled as a distance runner, and in his final year at school, he served as vice captain of the athletics team. He was really focused on academics and high achievements, and he didn't have much time or desire to have friends. It was stated that Fred's mother showed preference over him over his other two siblings, and this kind of left him with the feeling that he was better than other people. With this kind of attitude, he really did have difficulty making new friends as a child, and there was a bit of tension between the siblings. He was extremely close to his mom, who had really high hopes for him. Fred's sister decided to leave home at 15 years old. His younger brother didn't appear to be as bright as Fred, so his mom put much of her focus on Fred. When he was only 17 years old, his mother passed away from terminal lung cancer. He spent a lot of time watching the doctor care for his mother. The doctor gave her morphine when she was in pain and because it would calm and relax her as she struggled to live. This is what is believed that he made the decision to go medical school to become a doctor. He was admitted to medical school for training 2 years later, having failed his entrance exams the first time, before serving his hospital internship. Still a loner, Harold met his future wife, Primrose, at the age of 19, and they both got married when she was 17. She was 5 months pregnant with their first child. By 1974, Harold was a father of two children and had joined a medical practice in Yorkshire, where he had initially thrived as a family practitioner. Before allegedly becoming addicted to the painkiller pethidine, Harold forged prescriptions for large amounts of the drug. Then he was forced to leave the practice when caught by his medical colleagues in 1975, at which time he entered a drug rehab program. He received a small fine and a conviction for forgery. A few years later, Harold was accepted onto the staff at Donnybrook Medical Center in Hyde, where he integrated himself as a hard-working doctor who enjoyed the trust of patients and colleagues alike, although he had a reputation for arrogance amongst junior staff. Harold remained on staff there for almost 2 decades, and his behavior had only minor interest from other healthcare professionals. The local undertaker noticed that Harold's patients seemed to be dying at a very high rate and exhibited similar poses in death. Most were fully clothed and usually sitting up or reclining on a settee. He was concerned enough to approach Harold directly, who assured him that there was nothing to be concerned about. Dr. Susan Booth, another medical colleague, later found the similarity disturbing, and the local coroner's office was alerted. Dr. Susan contacted the authorities about what he had done. An investigation followed, but he was cleared, as it appeared that Harold's records were in order. The inquiry failed to contact the General Medical Council or check criminal records, which would have yielded evidence of Harold's previous record. Later, a more thorough investigation revealed that he had altered the medical records of his patients to corroborate their causes of death. Hiding behind Harold's status as a caring family doctor, it is almost impossible to establish exactly when he began killing his patients, or indeed exactly how many died at his hands, and his denial of all charges did nothing to assist the authorities. Harold's killing spree was only brought to an end thanks to the determination of Angela Woodruff, the daughter of one of Harold's victims, who refused to accept the explanations given for her mother's death. Kathleen Grundy, an active, wealthy 81-year-old widow, was found dead in her home on June 24, 1998, following an earlier visit by Harold. Angela was advised by him that an autopsy was not required, and Kathleen was buried in accordance with Kathleen's daughter's wishes. Angela was a lawyer and had always handled her mother's affairs. So it was with some surprise that Angela discovered that another will existed, leaving the bulk of her mother's estate to Harold. Angela was convinced the document was a forgery. He had murdered her mother, forging the will to benefit from her death. Angela alerted the local police, where Detective Superintendent Bernard Postles quickly came to the same conclusion upon examination of evidence. Kathleen's body was exhumed, and a post-mortem revealed that she had died of a morphine overdose. It was given to her in the 3 hours of her death and the time frame of Harold's visit to her. His home was raided, yielding medical records, a collection of jewelry, and an old typewriter which proved to be the instrument upon which Kathleen's forged will had been produced. It was immediately apparent to the authorities from the medical records seized that the case would extend further from the single death in question. And priority was given to those deaths it would be most productive to investigate, namely the victims who had not been cremated and who had died following a home visit by him, which were given priority. He had urged families to cremate their relatives in a large number of cases, stressing that no further investigation of their deaths were necessary, even in instances where these relatives had died of causes previously unknown to the families. When they did raise questions, Harold would provide computerized medical notes that confirmed his cause of death pronouncements. Shipman established his own practice. He worked overtime and was charming to all of his patients, until he wanted to kill them. The families of his victims had loved ones that enjoyed their doctor, but they knew his demeanor was not so warm and friendly after his patients were dead. Shipman had told the family of one of his victims, "Well, I don't believe in keeping them going." He would make strange comments like that, or would ask if he can have some of their items like prized possessions or even their pets. These requests were often denied. In addition to him working overtime, he would also murder overtime at his own practice. They had estimated that he killed 140 patients between the time he opened his practice and the time he was convicted. The doctors nearby would raise their eyebrows on how often Shipman would be at patients' homes who quickly perished. The reputation and arrogance would always block colleagues from investigating it further. Police saw the results of the autopsy and started an investigation on Shipman. They quickly found the same typewriter that was used to forge wills and notes to the ward. Accusations and evidence had snowballs from there. Investigators found many death certificates that didn't match medical records or he told about some victims. On September 7th of 1998, Harold Shipman was arrested and put in jail. Shipman never confessed to his crimes. Shipman was charged with 15 counts of murder and administering a lethal dose of diamorphine. He is found guilty in 2000. Shipman was the only doctor in history to be found guilty for murdering his patients. He hung himself in his cell 4 years later. He never confessed. Okay, Mom, what do you think about that?
Well, he had a better start off than the ones we have.
I don't know about that, because from the way I see it, his mom was not a very good person with the way she raised him, how hard she was, and then the fact of favoring him over her two children. And
okay, minus that, it seemed like he had a good start, and then his mom kicked in.
Okay.
Yeah. And then him wanting to cure people from sickness, what is a good thing, but then he started to turn.
Yeah, but I'd like to know what made him turn into wanting to kill people.
At that, I don't know either.
They don't really go into that.
No.
Like, what caused him to change his line of thinking?
Something happened, but they don't really tell you what happened because maybe they didn't know. But it is peculiar how he starts off okay, minus his mother, and then he proceeds on wanting to help people, and then in turn of that, he wants to start killing people?
I don't know, man. I just wish they would have caught him before he killed all these people. I mean, it's just...
And being a doctor, you're supposed to be,
helping people.
Yeah, not making them worse.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I just don't understand some people. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Well, the daughter there was right on top of all that.
Yeah, being a lawyer probably helped, too.
That, too. And which, in turn, she figured out there's something going on because of what was being said or what was written down. And being a lawyer, she would be trained to know, wait a minute, this doesn't sound right. This isn't the right procedure you do for somebody.
Well.
And stuff like that.
Yeah, well, the police kind of, I mean, they investigated it, but they didn't investigate it enough.
Yeah.
Because if they would have found what he did before, they would have seen there was a pattern, and they would have known she was right. But their investigation was basically not extensively searching into it, so he was able to continue killing these people.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I just don't understand about what went wrong with it. Did his mother's death mess him up that much?
Yeah, that could be the big question.
I do know that's why he wanted to go in, is because... Yeah.
He wanted to help people.
Yeah, he wanted to help people ease their suffering, but...
In turn, he turned around to be a monster that just kept him alive when he felt like it, and then when he went to their houses, he gave them something.
They shortly died after.
Yeah, I'm surprised none of the other doctors even talked to the police. I mean, there's suspicions, but they never really told them what led them to this suspicion of their eyes being...
Opened. Yeah.
I just can't believe he wanted to help people out first, and then it turned into murdering people. And that's a lot of people when they died in his care.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then he's sitting there being all nicey-nicey to them, and as soon as they passed, he's a butthead.
Yeah, like, what the hell is that about? Asking for their prized possessions or even their pets? Or even freaking sitting there forging a will of that one lady he killed. What the hell, man? You're sitting there trying to make money off your patients like that? I'm just glad that one girl was able to see something wrong with the second will.
Yeah.
Because why would her mom want to even leave everything
to him?
To him in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
That would make me suspicious in of itself. If she had never stated that or even gave any hint of that. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, her being a lawyer, she would write up the proper papers for that.
The daughter's the lawyer.
Oh, the daughter.
Yeah, the daughter's the lawyer.
Being a lawyer, she would write it up to where it would contain everything that she needed, and her mother would sign it.
Yeah.
And then she saw that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. There's a dead giveaway there.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't like his mother, though. Like, she just...
Yeah, made it to where he's more important than the others.
Yeah.
That's called favoritism.
Mm-hmm. And the daughter, his sister, it said that she left at 15 years old. Well, I can see why she would.
Yeah.
And his poor brother, that's just messed up too. I mean, he probably felt like...
Insignificant.
Yeah, insignificant. And the sister too.
Yeah.
That was wrong.
It's messed up he went into that, doing it the right way, and then all of a sudden switching over and doing what he did. Something happened along that line.
It might be the fact of him being addicted to that drug that
about that. Yeah.
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 That might be a factor on why he changed as well.
Yeah, because he'd be high on it.
Yeah, but he did go to rehab. I mean, it wasn't stated that he quit afterwards, but I would think he would. If he went to rehab, maybe he slipped back into it.
Yeah, that I've heard that. If they go in, you know, to try to get treatment, and then they get out and they mean well, and somehow they get caught up in it again. I can't believe he would go that way.
Yeah. So, is there anything else you would like to add?
No.
Okay. We want to know from our listeners what you think about what we read. And leave a comment on our website, which I will leave in the description. This has been your host, Olivia, and
co-host, Michelle,
on our podcast talking about true crime. What we covered in this episode was the life and crimes of Harold Shipman, more specifically him murdering his patients. Please spread the word to your family and friends if you liked what we did and if you think they would too. Please hit that follow button if you like our content and want to hear more from us. In our next episode, we will be covering Pedro Lopez, who is a serial killer. So if you want to hear more about him, please come back to listen to his life and crimes and hear what we have to say about him. As I stated before, we take requests on who you want us to cover. So if you want to do that, head over to our website and leave a comment with your name, who you want us to cover, and why. If you are hearing this message, you've listened to another entire episode, and we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Talking About True Crime, and if you have, please leave us a review as it will help us get noticed.
Thank you!